We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're back with Dads on the Air.
Welcome to Dads on the Air, this 8th day of November 2011. And this is Bill Cable from Mediate Now, and it's great to have in the studio this morning Phil York from Dads in Distress.
Thanks, Bill. Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
So as we get to this, we're approaching the middle of November. It's, did I say Movember? It's Movember, so hopefully all you Mobros out there have got your moustaches well and truly on the road and probably looking a bit disreputable or dishevelled at the moment. But anyway, let's hope by the end of the month you've got a respectable mo to get out there and start advertising for the cause. And this year it is for prostate cancer and depression that a lot of men suffer from. So two great causes. Let's get those mos going. So in this show today, we've got a very busy show today. We'll be crossing to the UK and we'll be speaking to Glenn Poole on the how IMD, International Men's Day, is going in 2011 in the UK. Then we'll be crossing to the USA. We'll be going straight to New York and we'll be speaking to Kathleen Williams. You might remember we spoke to Kathleen last year. She's always a very entertaining guest on this program. So we'll be talking to Kathleen about IMD events in 2011 in New York. And then finally, we'll be going for a pre-recorded interview over to Canada, and we'll be speaking to David Hatfield, who's in Vancouver, and David will be telling us what's happening in Canada, and there seems to be a lot going on there, so we're going to be very busy today. So before we get on with all the interviews, we might just look at some of the events that have been happening lately, some of the news events. There was an interesting article in the paper, in the Sydney Morning Herald, on Monday, November 7. The heading was "Domestic Offenders Find Soft Cell Beats a Jail Cell," and this is an article by Geesh Jacobson. This is in relation to men. It's only directed at men so far. Let's hope it gets expanded to help the other people who participate in domestic violence, and that's namely the women. But in any event, for 2,600 men have finished a 40-hour program, which is a 10-week course for men convicted of domestic violence-related crime. And last week, this program won an Australian Crime and Violence Prevention Award. The idea is that it teaches men to recognise the triggers, and when they get into a situation where it might lead to trouble, they now have the tools to keep out of trouble. It might just be a matter of if they see themselves getting into an argument with a former partner, they just know to ask to postpone the conversation. And it's had remarkable success. There was a comment from Assistant Commissioner Luke Grant, who said that in praising this program, he said that other programs were often hijacked by a focus on victims and feminist approaches who were more interested in punishment rather than trying to stop the offence happening. This is a great program. It's an initiative in New South Wales, and we can only hope that it continues and that it actually expands into all the areas of domestic violence that it's going to do some good. Now, I think we've...
I think we have Warwick Marsh on the line.
Yes, Warwick Marsh has just called in, so we'll just find out what Warwick's got to say. Warwick, good morning.
It's great to be here with you, Bill.
Thank you very much, Warwick. I know you're calling in from Melbourne on a busy day for you, but look, we always love to hear from you, and I know you've got a very important message.
Yeah, well, I think we've got a situation where they're bringing in this horrible rollback of shared parenting, and thankfully they keep extending the deadline legislation, which allows us to actually keep writing more letters and sending more emails and making more phone calls to the senators and the reps. But it's something that I'd encouraging all the listeners today to literally write a letter. And get a hold of the whole database and send a letter to each member of parliament, because this is a very, very important time in our nation's history.
And what do you see as the main danger of this proposed rollback that's before the Parliament at the moment?
Well, essentially, the Howard changes in 2006 brought some modicum of common sense to family law. It still, by far, was still horribly biased against the male of the species and horribly, you know, out of kilter. But it certainly was an improvement. In fact, to be frank with you, it was a surprise to me how much it did improve, because I wasn't impressed with the actual legislation. But what happened was the legislation actually gave a directive to the court to be more fair. And in effect, the court actually began, in part, to listen to the will of the people and the will of the Parliament for a more fair and just system when families do break up. And, of course, it's a very sad and difficult time, and really divorce and family breakup, no one wins. But, of course, the system is such that it was incredibly stacked against the male of the species. And, of course, unfortunately with that, it was incredibly stacked against the children having access, equal access to their father. Now, what it's doing, it's actually a reversal. In fact, it could actually be worse than the 2006 laws, because basically a father can be charged with all sorts of manner of evil and wickedness just on the hearsay of one person, because I feel this or I feel that. And there's no real evidence required for that initial charge. And, of course, that initial charge can hold up proceedings for 6-12 months while a man is trying to clear his name, because he's guilty until proven innocent, which, of course, is the reverse of common law, which we've had for almost 1,000 years now, came out of England. And so we've got a situation where fathers, good fathers, are basically hit with these horrible accusations, encouraged by lawyers who are egging the mothers on to create havoc in the family.
Yes, and while the women are, well, you know, it's usually the women in this situation, unfortunately, but when people are telling lies in court, there's no comeback, is there?
This is where it gets really, really devious, is that they're taking away the 2006 changes made a penalty of costs if they could be proved that you made a wrong accusation. It was possible to have costs awarded against you. Now, as far as I know, I don't think there was any case where costs were actually awarded against anyone. But what it did, it actually put a brake on, these pernicious claims and evil claims. And they still went ahead, and there were still false claims being made, in bulk, mind you. But they reduced. And so here we are, the government's actually aiding, abetting, lying in court. In other words, the government is encouraging perjury because it's removing any penalty for it. And, that's a very, very sad day. There's a saying in the Zohar, it says, justice has fallen in the streets. And this is a day, if this legislation passes, and it is most likely to pass because the Greens control the Senate. This is Greens-inspired legislation, and the Labor Party is dancing to the Greens' tune. And, of course, it will pass, and if it's passed, it will be a very, very sad day for the children of Australia.
Yes, I mean, it's going to mean that domestic violence is dealt with in the family court instead of where it should be, in the magistrate's court, and where there's a criminal liability before you can be convicted of this sort of thing. So it just seems to be all wrong way around, doesn't it?
It does. The family law court, unfortunately, has built a make-believe sort of justice system, because it's got no relevance to right and wrong. When you take some right and wrong out of a court, you actually paralyse the court structure. And whilst you could argue it was for noble reasons, they didn't want to have people accusing each other, the reality is that there is such a thing as right and wrong. You can't do away with right and wrong at the stroke of a pen. And, of course, the new wrong became the male of the species. And for 30 years, fathers have been horribly treated in the family law court system. And, of course, we have enormously high suicide rate. The suicide rate was almost approaching the road toll. And that's the male suicide rate, by the way. So it's four men commit suicide for every one woman, and many of those suicides were related to the shocking situation in our family law court. And actually, the suicide rate, as I understand, has gone down slightly over the last few years, but obviously it'll be climbing back up with the introduction of these new laws.
Mm. Well, look, it's great that there are people like you out there fighting this these unjust laws coming through, Warwick. And look, if people want to get on the bandwagon, want to join in fighting this, I know what you've said about the Greens and the Labor Party pushing it through, but there's still the opportunity to pressure our politicians. What should they do?
Well, look, it's, you know, we do live in a free country, and the politicians and parliamentarians are voted by people, and they are by law accepted to listen to the people. And while that law exists and while that goodwill exists, we should make sure we actually use that opportunity to put a case for truth and for justice. And I encourage fathers to write to their local member. And I mean, there's some great websites out there. Fathers for Equality website. They've got a an email system for members, certain members of the parliament, but also Australian Family Association. If you go to their website, family.org.au, you can go on there and you can send an email to all your senators and your own local member. Make sure you put your address in there, because they like to know who you are and where you are, that you're a real person. And just put one sentence: you object to these new changes that are coming in with the 2011 Family Law Reform Bill. And of course, it's not been approved by both sides. Usually family law, up till now, every family law bill has been approved on a bipartisan basis, which makes a lot of sense. And that's because it's obviously contested legislation, and therefore it should be something that is agreed on by the parliament, as opposed to disagreed on. And of course, here we have a situation where the Labor Greens are pushing this male hatred through parliament in the form of a bill supposedly reduce family violence. And of course, family violence arguably has reduced in the last 3 years since the Howard government came. Howard government's 3 or 4 years since 2006. And children actually aren't being killed, and thank God for that too. But of course, when you start to actually bring injustice into the system, and tensions rise and horrible things happen, and it's a terrible, disgusting bill. Yeah. So I encourage members to go on family.org.au and send an email, but better still, write a letter. That's the very best thing you can do. And Bill, thanks so much for your support, and all the best with your team on Dad's on Air. I hear you've got a wonderful producer in the back room there.
Yes, we have a new producer, Catherine Barrett, who's been doing a good job. So, and Warwick, for your own organisation, people want to keep in touch with you. Can you give us your website again so they can...
Yeah, look, thanks very much, Bill. I often forget to promote what I'm doing. It's fatherhood.org.au. So we run the Dads for Kids Fatherhood Foundation. That's our website. And if you go to fatherhood.org.au, you'll find us there. And we can sign up for a weekly email. I do like to keep people in the know what's happening out there. There's a weekly email that goes out. And we like to encourage dads to be the best dads they can be for their kids.
Look, that's great. And look, Warwick, thank you very much for making time to talk to us today. And we'll stay in touch with you. And let's hope this there is some sort of rollback of the rollback. But thanks again for coming on the program.
All the best, and thanks so much, Bill.
Thanks, Warwick.
And just further on that subject, you can also contact the Federal Members of Parliament by sending one email to them all at the one time, and you can gain access to that, as Warwick was saying, through the Fathers for Equality website. So if you just Google Fathers for Equality and follow the links and to the megaphone, and you'll be able to type one single email there, press send, and it will go to every single federal politician in Australia.
Great. So we know what to do. We might go for a short break, and we'll be back soon with our first guest. Thank you.
So fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child.
Dad's in Distress. 1300 853 437.
We're back with Dad's on the Air.
And welcome back to Dad's on the Air this 8th day of November 2011. And we've just been listening to Grumel, who is a new star in the Australian music scene. He sings exclusively in Aboriginal and has that haunting voice. But speaking of haunting voices, we're now crossing to the UK, and we're speaking with Glenn Poole, the Strategic Director of the Men's Network and the UK Coordinator for International Men's Day. Glenn, good morning.
Hey, Bill. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Some listeners may not realise we had a lot of technical problems last week,
we
but
did.
It's I'm sorry to have messed you around, but it's great to hear your voice today.
Ah, fantastic. It's been worth the wait. Thanks, Bill. Hello, Australia.
Now, Glenn, you've in the last year or so, you've had lots of time to think about an International Men's Day, and what's happening in Brighton and Hove this year?
Well, we've already started, and we took on, last year we took on bringing together people locally from lots of different kind of sectors and backgrounds to look at all the different issues facing men and boys in our city. So looking at improving health, supporting boys in education, working with fathers, tackling sort of, you know, violence and antisocial behaviour involving men, that kind of thing. And there was such a positive response from that, and a lot of great work came out of that locally, that we took on the challenge this year of, in the run-up to International Men's Day, hosting the UK's first national conference for men and boys, which we had last Tuesday. And wow, what a day. What a day. It was fantastic. Nearly 150 people from all over the UK coming together to share their expertise, share their experience, and just really start the beginnings of a new movement in the UK of people working to improve the lives of men and boys, all on the back of International Men's Day. So we're already started and hasn't even arrived yet.
And look, it's great that was such a success. We were very interested in leading up to that that conference last week. And I know some of the issues were you discussed whether the recent UK riots was a men's issue. Did that get any depth in the coverage of last week?
Yeah, we had some really great speakers. We had we looked at. There was many people saying, you know, what caused the riots, and one of the themes was, you know, did fatherlessness cause the riots? And so we asked the question, well, if fatherlessness did cause the riots, then, well, now what? Mm. And we had a real good mix of speakers. We had the CEO of the Fatherhood Institute, which is a think tank in the UK. We had the CEO of Families Need Fathers, which is a charity working with separated dads. We had a local councillor from London whose council has been doing some work reuniting gang members with their dads in order to get them out of gang culture. And we had a local practitioner who's working at a local level involving dads with their kids at schools. And there was just this general, 10 years ago, it used to be, you know, making the case for doing work with dads was really difficult. And what was great to see was that, you know, there's a confidence in people talking about the issue of what a difference it makes to work with dads and to help dads be more involved in their kids' lives. So that's great. And boy, though, do we still face some big problems. I'm you know, painting a rosy, optimistic picture because I'm really optimistic for the future. But we've got some serious issues we're dealing with here in the UK. And the picture, particularly for separated dads, is still very grim. It's still very grim. So it was good to see a group of people coming together and talking positively about how we might start to address some of those issues more effectively in the future here in the UK.
Yes, I mean, a lot of these issues that you're talking about are universal. They're certainly being experienced in Australia. I mean, one of the issues is boys' underperformance at school, and I guess that's part of the International Men's Day theme this year as well. How do we get the boys to get themselves up a bit?
Yeah, and that's, you know, this is one of the, it's interesting, on the boys in education issue, it's one of the most difficult issues to get some movement on, because there's a real difference in different sectors. There's a resistance to focusing on men and boys, or men or boys as a distinct group, and education is one of them. One of the great things that came out of our local conference last year was we inspired someone to take on doing a male literacy campaign in local schools. So his idea was that he would you know, try and improve the literacy of boys by actively involving men coming into school, so the dads or whoever it was in the kids' lives. That was his plan. So it was and it was a direct result of the conference. So we were inspiring action in our local area, which is what we intended to do. But by the time the project got lots of people's hands in it, it became about not about boys but about children. And it became not about involving dads but about involving parents. And the final result, when you looked at who was involved, was there were more girls involved in the project than boys. And there were more women involved in the project than men. And this is part of the challenge we face, is actually is getting the system to allow people to focus on men and boys as a distinct audience who need specific help. And the really infuriating thing for me with that example, Bill, was that when the local statistics came out for how well we'd done in education in our city, boys leaving primary school were twice as likely to leave our primary schools at age 11, unable to read and write at the right standard. And yet when men were going into schools and saying, "We want to help," they were saying, "No, there is no problem. We can't do that. You can't just focus on boys. You can't just focus on men. You've got to include women. You've got to include girls." And so so people are trying. People are trying now. But it's good to see people trying and coming up against these barriers, so we know what barriers we've got to break down in order to do better in future.
Yes, and I guess that is the first part, isn't it? You've got to recognise that there is a problem before you can actually do something about it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that is one of the themes of International Men's Day this year, is to give boys the best possible start. And we talked about educational focus. There are other themes, health and life expectancy. Did that come up at the conference?
Yeah, I mean, I think health's always been one of those things that's quite easy to make the case for health, because people really get it. And it really shocks people when I talk about how the life expectancy of a boy in one of the poorest areas of our city is 13 years less than a girl born in one of the richest areas. And in fact, boys living in the poorest area of our city have a less of a life expectancy of girls in areas like India or Sri Lanka. So so when you say that, people go, "Oh wow!" They can really get that. That's a real disadvantage to be looking forward to a much shorter life from the start. So I think we unify really well around health. But what was nice about, sorry, it's quite a trite word, isn't it? Nice. What was great to see about the conference is that in the past, we've tended to focus on health as like an issue in its own right, and then we focus on fatherhood as an issue in its own right. And it was great to get the health practitioners into the same space as people working in education, people working with fathers, and to have them see that there's a much broader kind of sector of people out there, which there's real overlaps. So just to go back to the literacy, there's some really interesting research that literacy is linked to poor health. So where the boys are really underperforming at school, the boys that are underperforming at school are much more likely to go on to smoke, to abuse drugs or alcohol, to be overweight, not exercise. So so when you start to put people in the same room and you start to make these connections, we can see that doing things like enabling boys to read at school will actually improve their health later in life. Or boys that have involved fathers are more likely to be fit and healthy. If they've got obese fathers, they're more likely to be obese. If they've got fit and healthy fathers, they're more likely to be fit and healthy. If they've got involved fathers, they're more likely to be healthy. So these things are linked and connected. So I think one of the really important things that start to emerge in the UK is that understanding that these things aren't separate issues, they're connected issues.
Yes, it's another awareness issue, isn't it, of the influence you do have on your young boys. And I mean, another area is this tolerance of violence, and it's the same in Australia, but we seem to be very tolerant of violence and abuse against men and boys, but not so much against females, which immediately gets front page news. And you know, why is it so? What can we do about it?
Yeah, I think that's another area where there's a big resistance to shifting. And worldwide, you know, there's something like 1.6 million deaths, violent deaths a year, and two-thirds of the men. Mm. And I was looking at our national statistics before I came out tonight, boys, young men, aged 16 to 24, are four times more likely violence than any other age group or any other gender group. And that's not recognised. And what people tend to do is, first of all, they'll ignore it. And then when you mention it, they'll instantly go, ah, yeah, but most of the people perpetrating are male. Like, that's okay.
Yeah.
Like, it's the same group. And it's not. So there really is. So we need to. What I believe is that you know, we need to start addressing violence in the context of stopping, you know, ending violence against all people. You know, not just women and girls. And of course, we want to stop violence against women and girls. Who wouldn't? But we also want to stop violence against men and boys. And we are far more tolerant, Bill. I mean, we send our boys and young men off to war, and you know, we think it's okay. We think they're tough and strong, and they don't mind being punched about a bit, you know. Mm. And I think one of the things for me is what I'd really like to see is an international campaign to stop violence against men and boys by whoever's committing it. You know, when it's young kids, it's mums and dads quite often, you know.
Yes.
Or sisters, you know, and brothers. If you're looking at vulnerable adults, like, you know, maybe disabled adults or adults with learning difficulties, there's a lot of abuse that happens in care settings, and a lot of that abuse is by women as well as men. So it's really understanding that there's a real mix of different types of abuse, and not all abuse is male perpetrators and female victims. Some of it is male victims and some of it is female perpetrators, and we need to be, you know, smart enough to recognize and address all of those types of violence and abuse, not just the violence and abuse that's perpetrated by men against women.
Yes, and that's certainly the message we want to get out here. We've got White Ribbon Day on the 22nd of November, which is limited to violence against women, but we'd like to expand it, as you said, to include all violence, all of which is unacceptable. So that's an ongoing task. Now, Glenn, I notice International Men's Day has been going in England in UK since 2008. Your first national conference was in 2011. Is this going to be an annual event?
Very much so. One of the things that emerged at the end of the conference was not just a desire to have an annual conference. It was a real, we want to do this again kind of mood in the room, but also a desire to form a network that's working and connecting with each other throughout the year, and to really build a sector. Because there's not really a recognised sector of people who work with men and boys. Maybe a men's health sector and a fatherhood sector, but there's not a recognised sector of people working with men and boys, and we're really committed to growing that, and we're really committed to doing things like getting male studies into universities so we can train the next generation of professionals to understand issues that men face as well as issues that women face. So we've got a guy in the UK really taking the gender studies world to task for not providing studies on men, and the student's actually suing one of the colleges in the UK for sexism in its gender studies training. So we really want to really want to shift something over here, and have the conference not just be a once a year conversation, but have the conference be the point in the year which punctuates an ongoing sort of campaign, an ongoing movement towards improving how we work with men and boys, and have it be a space where we come back together and we don't just sort of start again from scratch, but we're able to talk about what we've done since last year. So there's a demand to move it to London, there's a demand to grow it and, you know, have aim for 500 people rather than 150 people. There's a real desire now in the UK to really grow what we're doing and put more and more focus on work with men and boys.
Look, that's fantastic, and if we can get that momentum going, because we find that's a bit of a problem in Australia. There's a certain amount of people are lackadaisical about it. It's hard to get men, to get a number of men. I mean, we've had meetings in Parliament House where you expect 500 and you might get 50. It's an ongoing problem to get that enthusiasm, get the numbers up, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think For me, it's about having people who are able to collaborate. I mean, guys are really great. What I'm really understanding about the way that the men's movement works is that guys are really great at being lone crusaders and sort of ploughing their own furrow, you know, and really sort of like going after their single issue. And there's a lot of small, single-issue organisations out there. And in the past, that used to frustrate me. I used to think, why is it like that? Why can't we work in sort of more of a collective movement kind of way like the women's movement has? And I've come to realise that actually that's our strength. Our strength is we have lots of great individuals ploughing their individual furrows with their sort of single issues. And that's part of our strength. And if we can harness that into a movement, so if we've got some people actually who are working on creating a sort of like a collective space, a collective voice for us, but allowing those individuals to keep ploughing their individual furrow, together we can create an amazing team and an amazing movement that kind of eventually equals the great work that the women's movement's done, but isn't trying to copy it, because, you know, the women's movement is made up of women and the men's movement is made up of men. And if you haven't noticed yet, men and women are quite different. they do things differently, and that is our strength. For me, you know, men are great lone crusaders. Men are great solution finders. And yes, we also work in a team as well. You know, you see some great sports teams, so we can work in a team. But it's usually if you've got sort of great management or great coach or a great target. So you need people directing what we're doing, creating a space where we can work as a team, and setting targets that we can all work towards collectively. And I think this is the conclusion I've come to so far with the work I've done. But if we can keep doing that and keep creating a space where we can all see ourselves as part of a collective, you know, keep having these conversations across countries, across boundaries, keep using International Men's Day as a way for us to keep coming together and growing and focusing on what we're doing, then I think we can see a real shift in the men's movement, not just in our country and your country, but right across the globe.
Yes, look, it's very interesting you say that, and I take your point about the number of men's groups there are. I mean, in the studio, Phil York from Dads in Distress, and Phil does wonderful work with the dads. Phil, I don't know whether you've got anything to say about that.
Absolutely. Thanks, Bill, and good morning, Glenn, or good evening
morning,
over
Phil.
There. I see it all the time here in Australia as well. Men's movement, if you like to call it that, is very fractured. We have, as you rightly said, we have lots of really fantastic guys, and they come with a heart as big as Farlap, as they say. And, you know, they're doing some great work. But individually, we're doing awesome work. I can only imagine what it would be like if we actually all came together.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm thinking of some other groups. You know, we've got the Men's Sheds. We've got some of these other people that are doing wonderful work. If you know, it'd be wonderful if we could all tap into each other's experience, wouldn't it? And learn from all the other groups around the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think and in this day and age, with, you know, look, I'm in the UK, you're in Australia, and we're having a chat, and you know, we've got the internet. Why it's so easy for me here to learn about the very best way to work with old guys, and it's kind of starting to happen. You know, so things like, you guys have pioneered the Men's Sheds movement, and now we're getting it in the UK. And my dream is that we create this kind of global network where these very best ideas can spread really quickly. Mm. So if you guys have got a really great way of tackling male suicide, for example, we can get it over here as quickly as possible. And if we've got a really great way of improving the literacy of boys, we can get it over to America as quickly as possible.
Yes.
And I see International Men's Day as one of the vehicles for doing this. So that when we create a theme for International Men's Day, like giving every boy the best possible start in life, we know that all over the world, people are putting a bit of focus on what that takes. Now, it's small, and it's not enough. But it's the beginning. I genuinely believe that what we're building is the beginning of something, and that if we can share with you how we've managed to get lots of people from different backgrounds together, then maybe you can do it. You know, we've got lots to learn from you. You've got lots to learn from us. There's all those other countries in the world where great work's taking place that we can learn from. And it's by having these conversations and then turning these conversations into action that we can really start to make a difference. Yes. And when people see great stuff happening, they want to copy it. You know, when people see great stuff happening, human beings want to make a difference. And if they're surrounded by people making a difference, they're going to copy that and learn from it. And that's what we need to do. We need to keep showing how you can make a difference and have people copy it and learn from it.
Yes, and I think, as you say, that's one of the great things that's coming out of International Men's Day. It's a growth, and it is swapping stories, and you know, I think we need to develop it. We were hoping to see you out here, Glenn. You still got plans to come out to Australia?
Yes. Oh yes, my other half's in Sydney at the moment making a visit, so she's there. Half the team's over there. I'm waiting for my daughter to. Well, I'm not waiting. I'm enjoying my daughter growing up. She's 14 at the moment, and we've got another 4 years of being together here in our wonderful city of Brighton and Hove. And when she gets to 18, 19, I expect she'll be going off to university and not wanting to spend so much time with her old dad. And by then, I fully intend to be heading over your way.
Well,
and seeing if there's a job for me.
Well, that's right. I'm sure we could find plenty of work for you to do. But all right, well, you're welcome, of course, any time, and we'd love to see you. But certainly in 4 years' time, if you make the big move, that'll be fantastic for us in Australia. So, well, Glenn, we're running out of time. We're going to be crossing to one of your IMD colleagues in the USA shortly. But can we thank you once again for being on the program again this year? And it's great to talk to you and hear all that energy about what's happening in the UK. It's very inspiring for us. So thank you once again for being on the program, and we wish you all the best.
Thanks, Bill. Speak again.
Thanks, Glenn.
Take care. Bye bye.
Okay, now it's... You come old flat top, he come grooving up slowly. Got juju eyeball, he want holy roller. He got hair down to his knee. Got to be a joker, he just
They grow so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child.
What do you care? It's not like you were ever there anyway.
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437 or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
And welcome back to Dads on the Air this 8th day of November 2011. And now it is very exciting for us. We're going all the way to the Big Apple. We're going to speak to Kathleen Williams, host of the TV talk show I'm Just Saying and the International Men's Day coordinator for New York. Kathleen, good morning.
Oh, good morning to you as well. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Look, we enjoyed so much talking to you last year. It's great to get an opportunity to talk to you again. And perhaps you can tell us about what's happening this year for International Men's Day.
Oh, my goodness. It's just we are so excited about the events coming up. It was so successful last year, Bill. We decided to expand it to an entire weekend. So we will be operating on Friday night, the evening before International Men's Day, doing a program for young men in particular, and focused on young men because the young ladies wanted to be able to come out as well. But that program will be a workshop that we have invited great men in the community to come out, men who are business owners, politicians, educators, leaders in the community, and they are coming out to sit down and talk with younger men age 14 and up about life and about manhood. And that will be all male sessions, so women will not be able to get in and distract the gentlemen as they talk about things that are pertinent to them as young men and what the path to manhood looks like. At the same time, in separate rooms, ladies who are in the community, who are also business owners and teachers and mothers and aunts and so forth, will be talking to young women about how to look for men, and we are calling them men of swag, because this is the Swag University, and that is standing for men of sophistication, wisdom, accountability, and greatness. So we're teaching the young ladies how to look for that in the men that they deal with and how to raise men of swag for the mothers. And at the same time, we'll be talking to young men on how to become that. So we're excited about that for Friday evening. It's going to take place in two separate locations in New York, in two different boroughs. So if they, you know, one place is too far, they can go to the other location. And we've got a team of people ready and waiting and excited to meet the young men and ladies in both areas.
Yes, and so these are will be mentors, or take the role of a mentor in these sessions, I guess, and tell them, the young men, what they can expect to achieve or what they should expect to achieve.
Exactly. And also that night, the adults will be able to sign up, because I've begun to work with, you may be familiar with Susan Taylor. She is now the editor-in-chief emeritus of Essence Magazine. She was the editor of Essence Magazine for many years, and she has started now a national organization called National Cares Mentoring Movement, and she's looking to sign up 1 million mentors across the United States to help our young people. And so I am one of her co-chairpersons in New York, in my particular area of Queens, building up the mentorship programs in our area. So that night and the following night at the award ceremony, men and women will be able to sign up to mentor young people, whether they're at risk or not, and be buddies to them and help them along the path to greatness.
So is this addressed at all the young men? Say, I think you're focusing on, say, 14 to 18, but is this, is it folks at the African American particularly, or is it or poor nations, poor areas, or everyone?
This is open to everyone. However, we've started in communities of color, but this is open to everybody. Wherever they find themselves, they can come and join us. We are excited about that. So we're expanding. Swag University is starting just at two locations. This is our first session. But we will be taking that to all the different areas of New York City to begin, and then we'll expand beyond that. So we believe that our young men, it doesn't matter what color they are, our young men really are at risk and need to have the encouragement and the support of older men who can talk to them about manhood. And our young ladies really need to understand what manhood is. We, last year when we spoke, I mentioned that in the United States alone, there are over 10 million single parent families headed by women, another 3 million headed by men. And these children without both parents in the home, and I haven't even quoted the statistics for children in foster care, these children really need support, and they are not all African American, and many of them are not poor. Mm. But the poverty and the race factor does not eliminate, reduce, or increase at all the the ability to function without a man and a father in the household. I don't care how wealthy you are, you need a man. I don't care how, if you're poor, you need a guy, you need a father. So we are operating under the premise that our mentors will mentor anyone. But the crisis, and as Susan Taylor says, the village is on fire in the African-American community. It's on fire. Our fatherlessness is higher than every other nationality. Our graduation rates are lower than every other nationality for our boys. And the incarceration rates for young African-American men is higher than every other nationality. So the crisis here is of critical nature in the black community, but we will not turn our focus away from the fact that young men all over this state of New York are in dire need of mentoring and role models of excellent men.
Yes, and we're speaking with Kathleen Williams, host of the TV talk show I'm Just Saying and IMD coordinator for New York. And Kathleen, I'm sure you could talk me into anything, but do you find that the mentors that you're looking for, are they happy to contribute and to help you in this work?
Oh, my goodness. We had so many names sign up for the Swag University that we ran out of space on the flyer. We couldn't use it as the small flyer. We had to increase it to an 8.5 by 11 size just for the people who couldn't wait to get in the room. And the people who are coming, we have someone coming as far away as from Columbus, Ohio. So that is, he's going to be taking a 3 to 4 hour trip here to New York to participate in the festivities that we have going on here and to talk to these young men. And we have another gentleman who's coming in from North Carolina. So they're coming in from other states, and they wanted to participate and share what they have to offer with these young men who are just as hungry to hear from them. So there was absolutely no problem. I think what we need more of are opportunities, and people are so busy, Bill, they are willing to help, but they may not have the time to coordinate.
Yes.
And just like previous, if that was Glenn earlier, just like he was saying that if we can model for each other across the nations and show each other how to do this thing, people will come out. They absolutely will. So I have not had anyone that I asked turn me down. They all said, okay, where do you need me to be? Just tell me where to go and I'll be there.
That's fantastic. And then you've got this big night on the on Saturday, the November the 19th, the Great Men of Excellence Awards, the second annual Academy of Kings Awards ceremony celebrating. Can you tell us something about what's happening that night?
It sounds so great when you say it. I love the way you say it. It is a fabulous awards program, and yes, it is the second annual. And that evening, we will have men from all over the state of New York and some from outside of New York as well who will be honored for the great work that they do, whether it's locally here in the city of New York, in the state of New York, rather, or all around the world, many of them. So included in our list of honorees for this year is former mayor of New York, the only African American mayor of New York, David Dinkins. He will be on site to receive his legendary award for excellence in his work around the world. In addition to the former mayor, we have a gentleman who is our Man of the Year this year. His name is David Levy, and he is a radio personality for the Caribbean community. And his influence spans across the communities of the Caribbean around all over. And he's our Man of the Year because of his philanthropic ventures, as well as the information and opportunity that he gives people all over who listen to his radio program an opportunity to talk about issues of importance to them, including issues that are pertinent to young men. So he is our Man of the Year this year, and we have Senator John Sampson that we are expecting, as well as the family of Percy Sutton, who started any of the radio programs. It's just an amazing opportunity for us to honor some great men. And we have two, hopefully three, young men of promise. One is 13. He has been a business owner since he was 10. The other is 14. He is a phenomenal singer. And we have an opening for one other young man under the age of 18. And they are called the Young Men of Promise. So we are increasing the network. It's called the Academy of Kings because these gentlemen, as they expand every year, they are creating a network whereby our young men can reach out to them and talk with them and find out, what does it take to get to where you are? What does it take to be a man of excellence? You know, can you talk to me? Can you mentor me? Can you just pay attention to me? For many of these young men don't have an opportunity to speak to a judge. I just confirmed our own Judge Dwayne Hart, who sits on the Supreme Court here in the city of New York. He will be there to receive his award that night. And some of our young men have never had an opportunity to stand before a judge, except if they are it's in a criminal capacity. So this is an amazing opportunity for us to showcase these men, to thank them for their work and their commitment to excellence, and to let the young men and young women in the room know what's possible for them. Because what's possible for one is possible for all.
Yes, look, that is a fantastic idea to meet the judges. I don't know whether there's any plans to meet perhaps men of the police force in New York. That might be another good meeting.
Oh, absolutely. We have Detective Daryl Haynes, who was honored last year as one of our Men of Excellence. We have another detective and men from the corrections facilities as well, who are part of the Academy of Kings. Men from all walks of life are being inducted into this academy, and as it expands, there will be more work for them and more opportunities for them to share their knowledge and their experiences with young men throughout the state of New York and hopefully throughout throughout the United States. So we're starting in New York, but the influence is already beginning to span across other states. So I'm very excited about that.
Oh, this is a wonderful program. So it's not just for this weekend, the IMD weekend. It is going to continue throughout the year.
Yes, this will continue throughout the year, because now we have two sets of gentlemen who are members of the Academy of Kings. So we will be expanding the concept, you know, and just having it culminate again next year, 2012, November 19th, on International Men's Day. We'll be expanding it. So we'll introduce a new set of gentlemen into the Academy of Kings, and then have opportunities for them to really show what manhood is all about, not just on one day in November or one day in June for Father's Day, but throughout the year we'll be able to showcase them.
That's great. And I'll just put a little plug from what I know of New York. If you're looking for any performers, you can go down to the Apollo on Amateur Night, and there are some wonderful performers down there.
Yes, absolutely. We have performers, and last year our performers were from the Nassau County Youth Singing Contest, which I was a judge. So I was fortunate to be able to have the winners perform at International Men's Day last year. And this year we, again, will have young people. And interestingly enough, our performers this year, one, his name is Maurice Johnson. He's 14 years old, and he won the Apollo singing contest. Yeah. He was participating in many other great programs, and he's doing phenomenally well. So he's going to perform again. So we have an opportunity to really help the young boys, as we say, giving our young boys a great start in life. And that is another thing that we're able to do through this International Men's Day Great Men of Excellence Awards program, showcase them and let them have an opportunity to expand their careers by being in front of this great audience of people.
That'd be worth the price of admission on its own. So, Kathleen, if people want to find out, if they're interested in what's happening in New York, is there a website they could go to find out some more information about what you're doing?
Yes, absolutely. It is InternationalMen'sDayNewYork.com. Very easy. InternationalMen'sDayNewYork.com. And you can put NY or spell out New York. Either way, it'll come to the same place.
Well, that sounds pretty simple for people like me. So, Kathleen, we're running out of time, unfortunately, but it's wonderful talking to you, and just to get the buzz from you and from what's happening in New York. We can, from Dad's on the Air in Australia, we wish you all the very best for International Men's Day and for your work through the year with this mentoring program. It sounds absolutely fantastic. Wonderful work you're doing.
Thank you so much. And it's always a pleasure to be here with you in Australia. I brag about it all the time. I love it. Love your show. So I thank you. And I hope to have you on my show as well. So if you're available, just let me know anytime. I want to have you on.
That sounds great. I'll be in touch. I'll get my people to speak to your people.
That sounds great.
All right, Kathleen. Thank you very much.
Great men's day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Everything to you. You say you wanna start something new, and it's breaking my heart you're leaving. Baby, I'm grieving. But if you wanna leave, take good care. Hope you have a lot of nice things to wear. But then a lot of nice things turn bad out there. Upon a smile. Oh, baby, baby, it's a wild world.
It's a wild, wild world.
And I'll always remember you like a child, girl. You know I've seen a lot of what the world can do, and it's breaking my heart in two. 'Cause I never wanna see you sad, girl. Don't be a bad girl. If you wanna leave, take good care. Hope you find a lot of nice friends out there. But just remember there's a lot of bad, and beware. Oh, baby, baby, it's a wild world. It's hard to get by just upon a smile. And I'll always remember you like a child, girl.
See, I know you wanna get away. Cool, you can get away. Everything you see, oh, I'll just smile, girl, and start again. You probably see if I try it and I be, but I don't wanna do that, girl, no.
Baby, I love you, but if you wanna leave, take good care. Hope you make a lot of nice friends out there. But just remember there's a lot of bad. Like a child, girl.
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437 or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
And welcome back to Dads on the Air. And our guest now is David Hatfield. David is in Vancouver, Canada. And David is an independent facilitator, an experiential educator, trainer, and consultant. He is, in fact, also the Canadian coordinator for International Men's Day. David, good morning.
Hey, it's great to talk to you today, Bill.
Terrific. And now, David, you were the international coordinator last year for the first ever International Men's Day in Canada. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit how that went.
It was really quite good. I used a model of bringing together organizations that already are up and running here in the Vancouver community who are doing work with boys to support boys, men, and families. And so instead of trying to do a sort of big public speaking engagement with the public with a lot of facts and figures, to try and bring people's awareness around some of the issues and challenges facing boys and men, I wanted to do that same process through the lens of these different organizations that are working on different aspects of it already. And that model seemed to work well for the organizations themselves and also the public who's attending. I think they came away with a fairly accurate and more nuanced picture of what's going on in the real lives of boys and men here in Vancouver, and that was kind of my goal. So we had a good turnout, even though it snowed the night before for the first time in the winter, which scares Vancouverites because we don't get much snow. And this year it's translated into a bigger event with a lot of sponsorship, which we couldn't get last year because it was so new. So I feel like there's been a good growth curve that started out of last year's success.
Well, that's very encouraging. And, well, this year's theme is, in fact, about boys, isn't it? So that's great that you're focusing, I think, more on boys in some of your courses now.
Well, I've always worked... in fact, I started my work in masculinity with boys and young men and came around to working with men somewhat later. At the International Men's Day event, we kind of... There's a split focus, I'd say, or a multiple focus. We're encouraging, you know, organizations to attend and participate who do, for example, mentoring. There's three different organizations that encourage male mentorship. And then there's things like one of our local arts organizations is encouraging boys-only dance programs and in fact, has a waiting list now for a professional dance training stream. Just for boys and young men. So as one of our features this year, we have a group of those young men coming to do a full half-hour performance. And they did a small performance, almost like a guerrilla performance last year, and it just blew the room away. So we wanted to make sure to get them back. But all this to say, yeah, boys and men are part of a continuum, and we're linked to each other. So to me, it makes sense to be speaking about boys and men in the same sentence, if you will, for around International Men's Day.
Yes, and do you find getting boys to participate in programs like that, like the dance program, does that help to sort of free up their emotions and to sort of open up a little bit more than they would perhaps in some other courses that might be open to them?
Well, my experience working with young men is young people are flexible and still, you know, sort of forming their personhood, and given the opportunity to be in a more open, encouraging, and inclusive environment that, in the case of boys, allows a lot more emotional expression, my experience is they're hungry for it in an unconscious way a lot of the time. But given the opportunity to question some things, try on a slightly different or bigger comfort zone, and if they feel like they're in the presence of people, be it male or female, who are not going to ridicule them or make fun of them for having fears or questions or doubts or sadness, then those emotions come forward. So I'd say, yeah, they benefit a lot from that. Mm. And I think something... I'm really impressed with this particular arts organization that's made this stream available and has found good instructors, both male and female, I understand, to come in and work with the young men. And that young men who feel called to dance can do so in an environment that takes them seriously and gives them the kind of training and encouragement and edge that's usually available for boys who want to be involved in other kinds of sport that are more traditional for boys. So I think we're coming, you know, it feels good to me that there's an evolution of thought and practice that's coming around for some people and organizations, and it's not really a surprise to me that it works well for boys, you know, so I'm pleased to see that that's happening.
Yes, you've got a program, I think, Catalyst, which is developed for boys and about boys. Could you perhaps tell us a little bit about how that works?
Yeah, Catalyst is just such a place where I'm trying to create space and time for boys to have a kind of pause where we gather together as a group of males for the single purpose of focusing on the gender notions that are influencing our day-to-day lives. And for most boys here in Canada, and I would dare to say the same for you down in Australia, this is a first-time thing. That they've been in male groups maybe around sports or you know, official gang stuff or unofficial sort of, you know, groups of friends hanging out. But to actually be in an all-male group that's focusing on the male experience is new for them. So we're breaking new ground, but it's familiar ground. So there's a comfortable mix with enough of a learning edge that really engages boys. And again, they're hungry for this kind of opportunity, I believe, to have a chance to look at some of these questions they might be having or experiences of both each other as males and also like relating to and noticing the differences in female behavior or traits. So a big part of the Catalyst program for me, a big focus on it, is to help boys realize that there's a lot of unnatural, I would say, and not, they wouldn't say it in those terms, but I would, a lot of unnatural notions of difference that exist between males of all ages, in this case young men, and to actually step back with some perspective using some experiential activities to help them see those things and start to realize how many different ways we other each other. And what I mean by that is how we create ideas or beliefs about difference based on everything we can think of, size, age, athletic ability, you know, attractiveness, skills with different, you know, fixing things or athletic skills or skills with relating to girls and women, how people are doing in school in terms of their grades, all kinds of stuff, popularity. And what I'm trying to do is help them recognize those things and then offer something more powerful and more compelling. And that's what I feel like is my challenge as an educator, my responsibility, to give them experiences and make space where they can replace these notions of difference with powerful feelings of connectedness, you know, realizing that through their what I call a shared realization that through the experience of being seen as a male in the community and your family and schools, that, you know, we all, you know, anybody who looks male is having some of those experiences, and our biology is helping engender some of those experiences so that we realize, hey, even though I don't like that guy across the room very much, or I think he doesn't like me, or I don't even know him very well, we actually have a lot in common. Yes, on this level, this male level. There's things that we have experienced that I can relate to him on. It doesn't mean I'm going to become best friends with him, but it means that I can see him in some kind of brotherhood. And that's, you know, the core of why I do the Catalyst program and what I hope comes out of it. And within that, we sort of take the lens of masculinity and we place it down in different areas of life and sort of look at how the series of expectations that we experience from culture and each other and ourselves, how do they play out for us? And it's not all good and it's not all bad, but just to become more masterful and waking up that this is another area of influence in our life. So I try and encourage boys to take an active interest in this and to start developing a pathway to some mastery on understanding that there will always be expectations about gender,
and some of them will fit and some of them won't. But the idea is to become aware of those and conscious to give people a chance to make choices with a certain sense of freedom and empowerment. So it's a lot. It's a big challenge. But what inspires me the most is the positive response of the young men, that they're grateful for this kind of opportunity. They get very excited about it. And one of the excitements is that they can be more friendly to each other, more overtly, openly friendly, with more comfort around that. So, that's the nut and bolt of my work with boys, and I feel like the general response I get from them is a very positive one.
Yes, well, one of the messages for International Men's Day is this diversity and equality. And in fact, there is a diversity and equality statement that's been produced encouraging everyone, men, women, girls, boys, to recognise the broad differences, but at the same time, as you say, we should be looking at what brings us together equally.
Yeah, absolutely. And something I like about the diversity and equity statement from International Men's Day is this strong underlining of the desire, I think, in some ways, to make this, if we want to, I like to look at the International Men's Day movement and what's kind of starting to happen around gender work and advocacy for boys and men and males in general, is kind of a, in integral theory, they would call it, I think, transcend and include, and or just thinking of it as evolution, taking the best of what's been available in the past and building on from that. So although obviously International Men's Day is focused around the experiences, challenges, and positive contributions of boys and men, and it's focusing on them as a social group, my belief is that the International Men's Day community has recognized that sometimes in the past, when we've tried to focus on a specific social group, it's looked like or felt like or been like we've actually marginalized other social groups that aren't the main one we're focusing on. So I've told lots of people about how many women are involved in the leadership and coordination of International Men's Day activities, both as individuals and organizations of women. And there's usually a lot of surprise about that, and I was surprised by it too. And I think that's one of that's a hallmark of this intentionality around making the focus, yes, on boys and men, but recognizing boys and men are part of, that's one of the larger social groups, as it were, and that within that, there's a massive range of diversity, and to actually name up front, hey, disabled men, men of different races, different ethnicities, cultures, different value systems, and different socioeconomic structures are welcome to be a part of this together. And I get a lot of messages from the International Men's Day community as one of the coordinators. And one of the things I always love hearing about is, the introduction of a new coordinator from a different part of the world who may be male or female. Some of them, I've been told, have been disabled men, unemployed men, and underemployed men, as well as men who are thriving in those same areas. And that's something I don't see happening in other, in a lot of other sort of social change initiatives, that there's that much intentionality around not just saying we invite diversity, but making sure it's part of what's happening. And because this movement is quite young, I think that bodes really well for how it grows in the future.
Yes, an important message is that this is not to bring down International Women's Day or women in any way at all. There's room for both to be expanded and developed, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. Particularly among men and women, there's just been a lot of gender warfare and so many hurts going both directions on, just about any level I can think of. And I like, I was just reading in the Men's Day website, Jerome Tilak Singh, the founder of International Men's Day, speaking about that in some of his writing. And I'm really with him on that. I just feel like it's time for us to stop being afraid of each other. It's time for us to stop feeling intimidated or that if one gender is getting special treatment, that must mean the other gender should feel pissed off or threatened by that. And actually, we need to support each other's specific needs as social groups, but also find as many ways as we can to be collaborating on all levels. So we do need time to look at our own challenges and issues, and maybe to have gender separate time for that, but also to release that and not make it an us and them kind of paradigm. And maybe over time, who knows? I mean, there's a biological difference in gender, that's pretty clear. But we've got a pretty harsh socialization around male and female that's still very intact. And I hope in my lifetime that I get to see that harsh line between the two starts to get a bit blurry. And I think that will actually be, it'll take some reorienting around that, that blurriness. But ultimately I think that's where we're going, and ultimately that's what my hope is as well.
Yes, and we're speaking with David Hatfield, the Canadian coordinator for International Men's Day. And David, do you have any targeted message for the people in Vancouver about this year?
Well, yeah, come on down. It's a free event. You can't go wrong there. We've added more entertainment. We've added more things for families. So if you're bringing kids along, we've got some ball hockey. We've got drumming circles. We've got interactive stations. You can let us know what you're thinking about International Men's Day, or send messages to your father in writing or in images. And I think coming down because you're curious about it is a great reason to come. And also because everybody knows some boys and everybody knows some men. And I think it's common knowledge that a lot of men still are silent. There's a lot of silence around male challenges or when a man is struggling. And I think coming down and supporting a man by just being there and getting a sense of what's going on for men in the community gives everybody an opportunity to broaden their understanding of the male journey, including some of those silences. And what I heard last year, people sort of exiting of the event was that they were seeing boys and men in a new way. And I believe a more complex way that's more realistically sort of attuned to the real life experiences of men. And I think that's beneficial for everybody.
Yes, and that's...
I encourage people to drop in and check it out.
That's at the Roundhouse Community Centre in Vancouver. Is there a website where people can go to get some more information on that, David?
Yeah, they can go to the International Men's Day website, which is, do you want me to spell that out?
Yes, please.
Okay, so that is www.international-men's-day.com /Canada.php. So you can also just check out all the other things that are going on in the rest of the world around International Men's Day, and that's a good education in itself.
That sounds great. David, I think we're running out of time, but Ma, thank you very much for coming on to Dad's on the Air today and to tell us a bit about some of the things you're doing in Canada. It all sounds exciting, and it's all very, very, very encouraging, the work you're doing and how you're developing International Men's Day. So once again, could I thank you very much for being on the program?
You're very welcome, Bill, and I extend the same kudos to you with the work you're doing with Dads on the Air and having an advocacy program like that around men's issues, specifically father issues. To my knowledge, there's nothing like that here in Canada, so I'm reminded of the learning that Canada still has to do from some of your efforts down in Australia. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, we'll have to try and get together and see what we can do about that. But once again, thanks very much, David.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
And welcome back to Dads on the Air for the last time today. We've had a very international show today, as appropriate for International Men's Day coming up on the 19th of November. You might recall the theme for International Men's Day in 2011 is Giving Boys the Best Possible Start in Life. And it's been great today to speak to, initially we spoke to Warwick Marsh about some of the problems with the developing Australian legislation in family law. We switched to the UK to speak to Glenn Poole, to New York to speak to Kathleen Williams, and lastly we went to Vancouver, Canada to speak to David Hatfield. So it's been a great show. We'll be having another big show next week, the third and final of our three-week series in the lead-up to International Men's Day, and that theme, Giving Boys the Best Possible Start in Life. So we'd like to thank our guests today, Warwick, Glenn and Kathleen and David, and from me, that's Bill Cable from Mediate Now, from Phil York from
Dad's in Distress. We'll be saying goodbye, and we look forward to seeing you all next week.
Great show, Bill. Well done. And the Mo's looking fantastic. Keep it going.
One final comment. Go to our website. It's www.dadsontheair.com.au.
Canned hush all over the world. Tonight, all over the world, you can hear the sounds of lovers in love. You know what I mean? Just the two of us and nobody else. In sight, there's nobody else. And I'm feeling good, just holding you tight.